I'm Glenn Moberg. You're listening to a Route 51 rebroadcast of the 29th State Senate recall election debate between Republican Jerry Petruski and Democrat Donna Seidel at UW Marathon County Center for Civic Engagement Theater on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
Support for WPR comes from UMR, a United Healthcare company providing employee benefits administration, integrated health management, and pharmacy benefits administration for self-funded employers throughout the U.S. More at umr.com.
Good evening and welcome to the Center for Civic Engagement Theater on the UW Marathon County campus for the 29th State Senate recall election debate between Republican Jerry Petruski and Democrat Donna Seidel. I'm Glenn Moberg of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our panelists tonight are Robert Mentzer of the Wausau Daily Herald, Melissa Langben of WAOW Newsline 9, Jeff Talen of WSAW News Channel 7, and Matt Lehman of WSAU AM 550. A special thanks to another of our sponsors, the Wisconsin Institute for Public Policy and Service, and its director, Eric Giordano. Thanks also to UW Marathon County Dean Keith Montgomery, Theater Director Chris Berg, and Wisconsin Public Radio's Rick Ryer, Jane Ricker, and Crystal Bennis for helping produce this event. There are closing statements, but no opening statements in tonight's debate. Our candidates have 1 minute each to respond to each question, followed by a 2 to 3 minute open discussion period. And for the first question, we turn to Robert Mentzer of the Wausau Daily Herald.
All right. Thanks to both of you for being here, and thanks to all of you for being here. Wisconsin has gone from having a multi-billion dollar budget deficit projected in for 2009 to 2011 to having a projected surplus. Local government officials around here say that budget reforms made it possible for them to hold the line on taxes without cutting programs or laying off workers. Would these things have been possible without the Republicans' budget reforms? And do we risk going backwards if they're repealed?
We start with Jerry Petruski. You have 1 minute.
I think we're very fortunate that there were some contributing factors, that the economy is starting to look a little better. But I think the reforms that were done really made it possible for the state of Wisconsin to once and for all get on an even keel. Too many times for too many years, we were continually having a shortfall, a budget deficit at the end of the cycle. And we always had to deal with that structural deficit before we could go on into the budget. Because of the changes that were made, the greater contributions by state workers for pension plan, the increased contributions for health insurance, and the ability for local governments to go outside of the negotiated insurance company to indeed get the best deal they could for insurance and save a lot of money along the way. I don't think that anything is easy in government. There are always tough decisions that have to be made, especially when you have an atmosphere where it's becoming very tough and a lot of unemployment and a recessionary circle.
Donna Seidel, you have 1 minute.
Thank you. Well, we know that budgets are the best expression of our priorities. This certainly wasn't the first time we started with a deficit. We, in fact, had a larger deficit 2 years earlier when Democrats were in control. We balanced the budget, but we did it by making different choices and having different priorities. This budget, the deepest cuts were to public education, $1.6 billion, 30% cut to our technical college system, and historic cuts to our university system. Going after education as a first place to cut is a situation that I would have done differently. We can make different priorities. We found a way, the Republicans found a way in this budget cycle to set aside $2.3 billion in tax incentives for the wealthiest corporations, special interests, and richest individuals at the expense of our public education system and many public workers who took the brunt of this budget. That was wrong. We can do better, and we can do it differently.
And Rob Mentzer, you have a follow-up.
Well, my follow-up does deal with the education cuts to the education budget. I mean, the balance did happen in large part, as you point out, through cuts to education spending at K through 12, but also to the UW system and technical colleges. So that's I would like to hear from both of you a little bit more about, were those cuts worth it to get the state's fiscal house in order?
They weren't,
or did they do harm to our school children?
We have a two-minute free form discussion.
Well, period. They weren't worth it, Rob. And at a time when we clearly knew the top priority going into this election, this legislative cycle was to create jobs and grow the economy, we understand that we cannot create a skilled workforce for today and for the future if we do not have a strong K-12 system, if we don't have a robust technical college system, the premier job trainer and worker retrainer, and certainly our university system. So those were really misguided decisions, and we have seen the result of those decisions, that rather than growing jobs in this two-year cycle, what have we seen? Wisconsin dead last nationally in numbers of jobs created, in fact, jobs lost.
I think Donna is so wrong on so many things, but it's going to take me more than 3 minutes to tell you about them. First of all, the deal with the technical college. We talk about a huge cut to the tech, the North Central Technical Institute. Yes, the state reduction was substantial. However, when you look at the overall reduction to their overall budget, it actually was only 2.5%, and I have a fiscal memo here if anybody would like to see it. Secondly, when we look at the budgets year by year, I believe 2 years back it was a 3.2 shortfall, and the ones we dealt with was a $3.6 billion shortfall. The budget prior to that, which Representative Seitel was in, as she likes to say, in leadership at that time, went ahead and cut education also, and then backfilled somewhat with the stimulus money. But however, there was a $280 million shortfall that the time the Democrats left all local governments pilot right onto the taxpayer. And that equated to a $1.5 billion tax increase on your property tax bill. That was not helpful.
We have to move to the next question now. Let's go to Melissa Langben. Melissa, you have the next question.
Thank you, Glenn. Donna Seidel, one of your campaign ads, accuses Jerry Petrowski of cutting funding for breast and cervical cancer screenings. Jerry, you've called that ad false, and you stated in a newspaper column that the only time in the last 10 years that funding for cancer screenings was cut was back in 2009, in the 2009 budget that Donna Seidel voted for, and you opposed. Who's right here?
Thanks for the question.
Donna first.
Thanks for the question, Melissa. When we talk about Jerry's failure to support health care for women, we're talking about a series of votes over a couple of sessions. We can begin in the 2009 session when people were concerned about women having access to breast and cervical cancer screenings. The proposal from Joint Finance was to fund it at $125,000. Jerry and his Republican allies thought that was way too much to spend and cut it in half, again, giving fewer women the opportunity. Better minds prevailed, and the upper limit was sustained, but no thanks to Jerry. At the same time, there was a proposal to start a pilot program for advanced cervical cancer treatment for women in rural areas of northern and western Wisconsin. $175,000 to start the program, get it off the ground. Jerry thought that was way too much and wanted it cut to $75,000, putting that at risk. He also voted to defund Planned Parenthood, which would have the only provider of cancer screenings for 12,000 women in 8 counties. When he decided that that was all right to do, he was unaware of what the options would be for those 12,000 women who were at risk. That, to me, demonstrates a lack of interest or concern for the health care of so many women in this state.
And, Jerry, we're going to give you a minute 25 to respond.
Thank you. First of all of Donna's commercials have been negative, attacking me, basically stating that in the 07 budget that I reduced funding for breast cancer screening. The reality is she spent $100,000 trying to tear me apart on this one issue, and the reality is that I voted for a $62,000 increase and a $38,000 increase, and the facts are that she is the one that actually voted to cut that program in the 09 budget. The only time it's been cut is what she did when she voted to cut it. She tries to blame me for the cuts that she made to the Well Women's Program for breast cancer screening.
That's what's wrong with politics today. I think a little truth in this matter would really be helpful.
And Melissa, you have a follow-up.
Governor Walker recently signed a bill which repeals the state's 2009 equal pay enforcement law. And Democrats say this could actually take away equal pay for women. Now, Republicans say that there are still some federal protections in place and that the state law could have hurt businesses by hitting them with large damage awards. Will the repeal of the law have any real effect on women?
And for this one, we go, this is the open discussion period. You have 2 to 3 minutes.
Let me take just a few seconds to ask Jerry to really think about this. Does he believe he can convince people that I would cut a program that has been one of my top priorities in my legislative career? Absolutely not. When Democrats saw a budget that needed to be corrected, that needed to be balanced, we did an across-the-board cut to all agencies, all programs. We did have the benefit of recovery dollars. And because Democrats work with health care providers in all of our communities, we knew what they needed to backfill that across-the-board cut. And we added $2 billion in health care across the state. So not only were they backfilled, but they got supported at a higher level for the very programs that Jerry is accusing me of cutting, and he knows better. On pay equity, let me just say that with the bill passed by the Democrats in the previous session, we saw the pay gap in Wisconsin. That is real and verified by research and evidence, 78 cents on the dollar. Wisconsin went from 36th state in the country in gap to narrowing that gap to put us in the 24th spot. That was good for women. That was good for our communities. Not a single case went to court because the bad actors, and I'm happy to say most employers do the right thing, but the bad actors knew that there would be repercussions to them, that they would have reasons not to do that. And as a result, they were finding ways to pay women what they ought to pay women. And we have a case right here in this area where a woman will talk about how she, as the top salesperson for a manufacturing company in Abbotsford, was top salesman for 8 years and lowest paid. After a number of opportunities to go to court and prove her case, she was given back pay for less than 2 years, pay that she should have been earning for eight. So
Jerry,
these situations are real.
Let's let Jerry get a word in.
First, I will go back and clear up Donna's problem with the truth from the prior issue. In 2009 was the only time that the women's wellness program was cut, and Donna voted for it. She told a reporter last week that, in fact, she backfilled with federal money. However, I do have a fiscal memo on that also. There was no stimulus money that went into the women's wellness program. So that was a cut that Representative Seidel made, and for $100,000 or so, she'd been trying to tell everybody that I was the one that did it, and it was not me, it was Donna. Now, with the equal pay for equal work, that is federal law. That did not change. The state did not change that. The law that is in question was a state law that was never used. There is the ability for anybody that's wronged, and I am against discrimination in any form, but this is a case where they have the ability to go through workforce development for punitive damages, for compensation, and they can always use the federal court systems, which have been around for a long time. I think on this issue, you have to make sure that you compare equal pay for equal work. Now, there's a situation where if you compare somebody that does a job and somebody that does a much higher paying job, it has nothing to do with if somebody is a woman or a man. But if it's the same work, it should be the same pay, and that's what I stand for.
That's exact, Jerry. Tell that to the woman in Abbotsford who was the lead salesperson in her company for 8 years, and every male counterpart was earning substantially more than hers. In the court case, when she and her supervisor went to the CEO, not only was obscenities used, obscenities I couldn't even use on the stage toward her, but she was told, don't worry about it, you're still going to produce anyway, and besides, your husband makes plenty of money. So we see situations like that. And by the way, there are federal provisions, but there's nobody who understands federal court that doesn't know it is cumbersome, it is expensive, it is exhausting, and there are so many obstacles to using it. That is why, by the way, Jerry, 43 other states have state protections for equal pay discrimination. Wisconsin was one, and we were right to do it.
And the law was not used. And on top of that, the group that registered in favor of this law were the trial lawyers, because their intention is to make more money out of this deal. The intention should be to make sure that these women that were discriminated against get their day in court and a fair settlement.
I'm Glenn Moberg. You're listening to a Route 51 rebroadcast of the 29th State Senate recall election debate between Republican Jerry Petruski and Democrat Donna Seidel at UW Marathon County Center for Civic Engagement Theater on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
Support for WPR comes from Rely Local Wausau, working to build the local economy and strengthen the community by making local business everybody's business. Learn more about locally owned and operated businesses at relylocal.com.
So let's go to Jeff Taylor now of News Channel 7. Jeff.
Thank you, Glenn. Good evening, representatives.
Good evening.
Job growth in Wisconsin has been sluggish at best, and by some measures, we've lost the most jobs of any state in the nation last year. Even the more positive job numbers released last week by the Walker administration show growth lagging well behind what's required for a strong recovery. Why has Wisconsin performed so badly, and what would you do to turn it around?
Jerry, you've got a minute, then Donna.
Okay. Thank you. I think that's a great question. I actually spent part of the day today looking for the answer on why all the different job numbers. And the job numbers are generated in three different ways. There's an establishment survey, a household survey, and a consensus survey. Now, unfortunately, some of these, especially the one that I think Donna uses, is the establishment survey. And that shows, because of a benchmark that they set once a year or periodically, it's not accurate. I can tell you that within the job market, we are at 6.7%. The amount of people working is up. The amount of people on unemployment is down. The revenue to the state has risen. We actually are one of 25 states that the unemployment numbers are dropping fast. The revenue to the state is up between 4 and 5% for income, sales, and business income. And taxes. And I think this shows you that we are going in the right direction. And I think that we will see this number continue to progress. Now, this isn't the total answer, 6.7%. I think it's important to realize that every community is different. These are state averages. And I understand the people here who have lost their job in the paper mill, who have lost their job at S&E. And we're going to continue to look at ways that we can enhance our economy and grow our jobs and grow this economy to get people back to work.
Donna Seidel.
Thank you, Glenn. You can use the long, highly regarded Federal Labor Bureau statistics that every other state uses and that Wisconsin has used until last week. Or you can use the newly found numbers of Scott Walker that have not been tested, are not comparable to any other state. But it doesn't matter which numbers you use. Slice it or dice it anyway. Wisconsin is dead last in job creation because the policies put in place by Jerry Petruski, his Republicans, and under Governor Walker's leadership have not worked. I have a record of proven job performance. I helped through a job incentive that I created in the last session bring a company aggressively recruited from all over the country right here to Wausau. We'll have a chance to talk about that. When Governor Walker was inaugurated, a year and a half ago, and the Republicans in control, Democrats went to them and said, you know what, we had great successes in the last session. Here are 10 more good ideas, proven to work, building on what we did well. Jerry, Mr. Bipartisanship, did nothing to convince his colleagues to advance a single one of those bills. That was missed opportunities, and maybe the headlines in today's paper would not say 400 more jobs lost in Wausau in April.
Your time is up. Jeff, you've got a follow-up.
Yes, sir. On the issue of jobs, why did you vote for or against the proposed changes in the state mining permit process? And it would have led to a large iron ore mine in northern Wisconsin. Which way did you vote and why?
This is a two-minute open discussion period.
Well,
who goes first?
Whoever wants to go first.
Thanks. I voted against the most extreme mining bill, not because I'm opposed to mining. I was opposed to a bad bill. I can say I agree with Scott Walker, because just in the last week, Scott Walker has admitted that perhaps he should have done things differently. Perhaps he should have had mining experts and environmental experts, stakeholders, and the people most directly affected come to the table and work out a compromised agreement. That is precisely what I was advocating, precisely what I was saying. This mine, 22 miles long, 4 miles wide, and 1,000 feet deep, I wanted to be absolutely sure that air quality would not be compromised, that drinking water in that area would never be contaminated by lead and arsenic. When I can get those assurances, then absolutely I will be committed 100% to creating those good-paying jobs that are very desperately needed in that area of Wisconsin.
On the jobs issue, going back one step, Donna talks about creating jobs, but under her watch, the state lost 150,000 jobs. On top of that, she raised taxes $4.7 billion. That's not a job creator either. On the mine, I think people have to realize this is much different than any gold mine or zinc that we've looked at in the state. This is basically excavating a hole in the ground, taking out the iron ore, crushing it, picking up what sticks to a magnet, putting it on a freight car or a truck, and shipping it off to a smelter at some place. Just running a big shovel is not an air quality problem. This would be dramatic for the state. 5,500 jobs, up to $2 billion of commerce, and as this would work through our economy, it would make it tremendously different for the state of Wisconsin. The reason that this failed in so many ways is not because it was a bad bill, because we do the same kind of mining out here in the gravel pits. The reason this was a bad bill is they did not want to see Scott Walker have a win on the mining issue. One more thing.
Let's move on. Let's move on to Matt Lehman. Matt, you've got the next question.
Jerry, Donna, good evening. Both of you are coming out charging hard tonight, which leads me to my next question. What do you plan to do to address the polarization in this state after the elections? And with both of you members of your party's leadership, what will you do to restore honest bipartisan policymaking in Wisconsin?
Donna Seidel, you've got a minute.
Did we have a follow-up to that previous question? I didn't believe that there was a rebuttal. There was. Okay. I do have to get back to that, because it's not quite the easy operation Jerry is portraying it as. As we know, that 3 billion pounds of acid-producing waste are going to be excavated every year. Let's talk about polarization in the state. We, unfortunately, are seeing the most divided, the most polarized state in the country, and Wisconsin more divided than ever before. At a time where families can't even sit down and have a family dinner together without being afraid it's going to break out into an argument over politics. It began under Scott Walker when he dropped the bomb and decided that what many of us were saying was to divide and conquer. And we heard, no, that's not it, until we now know, because of words from his mouth, that was the intent. It was his intent to divide and to conquer. There are ways we can work together. There were opportunity after opportunity for Democrats who were reaching across the aisle saying, we want to work with you. We have good ideas. We actually want to concentrate on growing jobs. Help us advance our policies. Jerry Petrosky, 14-year member of the Republican caucus, did nothing to convince his colleagues to allow us to do that.
And, Jerry, you've got a minute.
Donna's idea of working together is slam somebody on TV to the tune of about $100,000+. That's Donna's working together. Now,
Let's treat these candidates with respect, please.
Two states already have these type of mining laws that are mining iron ore. Our process would have been under the authority and guidance of the DNR, the EPA, and the Army Corps of Engineers. Now back to the question about getting along. Donna talked about initiatives that were moved forward for jobs. I can tell you only one of these bills came to me in the Committee on Transportation. And I took up the bill and moved it forward. Now, did it become law? No, but somebody else stopped it along the way. I will tell you that I chair a committee with 15 members. Almost half are Democrats, half are Republicans. I listen to the other side. If they have good ideas, I incorporate them into the bill. And the reality is 90% of the bills that come through my committee pass on a bipartisan level, the bills that we pass, and a lot of them are unanimous. That's working together. That's the committee system working together, and that's how the whole legislature should work together. Now, I can't guarantee you that everybody down there is going to be like that, but I can tell you I have always functioned at working with the people that are on my committee, and we move forward from that.
Matt Lehman, you have a follow-up?
You talk about working bipartisan in a bipartisan fashion in the legislative branch. Let's extend that to the executive branch. Jerry, if Tom Barrett is elected in this recall on June 5th, how do you plan to work with his administration? Donna, if Governor Walker survives this recall, what steps will you take to partner with his administration?
Let's start with Jerry and then go to Donna.
I can tell you, Matt, that I can work with just about anybody. In fact, I did meet Mayor Barrett last Friday, and we did have a short conversation. I think a lot of the people are really, truly concerned about moving things forward and what's best for the state. And I have always been there. I look for ways to try to make our community better, whether it be laws or whatever. It's not just about voting yes or no on a bill. It's being involved in the community and helping people in that community achieve what they need to in life. And that's what I have worked on for years.
Thank you. Actually, Jerry, I have a great idea. I've just thought of this with your question about Governor Walker, and that is we have just learned that Governor Walker appointed a deer czar about a year and a half ago, a deer czar being paid $128,000 to tell us how to hunt, where to hunt, when to hunt. And now we're learning that this deer czar is opposed to the idea of hunting on public lands, thinks it's akin to communism, and is discouraging that. Let's understand that most of the hunters in this state hunt on public land. So I would suggest, Jerry, I've talked to Governor Walker, I've worked with him, let's go meet with Governor Walker together and say, in the interest of our community, in the interest of our constituents, let's convince him to let that deer czar go because he is wrong for Wisconsin. Show bipartisanship. Yeah. And I'll tell you what else. Let's take it a second step further. We heard in last week that in the good old days, Democrats like Tony Earl and Republicans like Walter John Chilson drove together to Madison. I'll pick you up. Let's drive together and meet with Governor Walker.
I'm Glenn Moberg. You're listening to a Route 51 rebroadcast of the 29th State Senate recall election debate between Republican Jerry Petrosky and Democrat Donna Seidel at UW Marathon County Center for Civic Engagement Theater on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
Support for WPR comes from Northwind Renewable Energy in Stevens Point, partnering with agricultural and commercial industries to invest in central Wisconsin's renewable energy future. More about the benefits of solar for business at northwindre.com.
We're going to move on to the next question, which I have. Governor Walker has said he has no intentions of making Wisconsin a right-to-work state, but he has refused to say that he would veto a right-to-work bill if it reached his desk. Tom Barrett says the governor has a hidden plan to pass right-to-work legislation, which he claims would destroy private as well as public unions. Barrett points to the governor's divide-and-conquer remarks in a soon-to-be-released documentary film as evidence. Is there a hidden plan to make Wisconsin a right-to-work state, and would either of you vote for a right-to-work bill? We'll start with Jerry and then go to Donna.
I don't believe that there is a plan to do that. I would vote no. And I don't believe that there is support to do it. We are partnered with a lot of unions in this state that are really working very hard to make sure that this state is the best that it can be. We've partnered with a lot of, even with the mining issue. And I think we're going to move forward in a lot of ways. And I don't believe there's support for right to work.
Donna?
This is really hard for me to digest, that we're partnering with unions after you assaulted the public unions and stripped away 50 years of collective bargaining, of all of the collective bargaining rights of public unions. That was a bipartisan bill created 50 years ago in the legislature, and it has created worker peace in Wisconsin. When the public unions agreed to the concessions, you could not accept yes for an answer. You went after more, and you said, we will not give you opportunities to sit at the table and talk about workplace safety, talk about your conditions of your job, talk about your hours of work or anything else. And now to say you support unions, I find that pretty hard to imagine that that is honest. And I agree that we ought to be very concerned with what Scott Walker's saying, because what he isn't saying is, while he is saying we don't have the support, he has refused to say that he would veto that bill when it came to his desk. And we know that you can't sign a bill that the legislature doesn't pass. Just as Jerry said, didn't really agree with the collective bargaining issue. He passed the bill, and without his support, it may not have gotten to the governor's desk. So
I've got a quick follow-up. Ronald Reagan, referring to public workers in Poland, once said, quote, the right to belong to a free trade union is one of the most elemental human rights. Governor Walker says collective bargaining for public workers in Wisconsin is not a fundamental right but an expensive entitlement. Who is right on this issue?
You know, I one of the reasons I wanted to be in the legislature is because I believe strongly in worker rights. I believe in worker rights for public employees. I believe in worker rights for private employees. That is how we all do better together. Look around at right-to-work states. Here's what you will find. You will find that wages are lower than in other states. You will find that benefits like health care provisions are lower than in states that don't have right to work. I believe it's a basic right. It was a right that was under attack under Governor Walker and the Republicans in control like Jerry Petruski, much like the attack on voter rights, much like the attack on women's rights. So it is wrong, and we should be supporting all of our hardworking workers in this state, public or private.
Let's give Jerry a chance to respond. Please hold your applause.
Now, when we look at this whole picture, when we did the collective bargaining changes, Act 10, those weren't easy choices, but they were choices that needed to happen because the reality is, I think the average person believes that state workers should be paying towards their pension, should be paying a fair amount towards their health insurance. Now, without those concessions, there would have been huge layoffs. Coming back to this area and telling people they were going to have to get laid off in huge numbers, maybe as many as 8,000 across the state, was just ridiculous. I wouldn't want to tell those families that they no longer could find a good job that they had to take care of their families. There's one more issue that I think is important here also, as long as we're talking about this. In 1978, collective bargaining was taken away in the most part from federal workers. It was signed by Jimmy Carter. It was voted for by Mr. Obie twice. And the reality is the only bargaining they have right now is for working conditions. Mr. Obie can still ride in the Labor Day parade. Nothing is said, but maybe it's because he was a Democrat.
You know, the question isn't the concessions that were agreed to. The concessions were agreed to on increased payment for benefits and retirement. Jerry couldn't take yes for an answer, and they needed to go further and strip all collective bargaining rights away from public employees. What was that about? How was that necessary to balance the budget and deprive them of every kind of opportunity to sit across from the employer and figure out how to solve problems? It's what we do in our families. It's what we do in any organization when you have some kind of problem to solve. You work together to solve it. Public employees now are denied an opportunity to do it. Had nothing to do with solving the budget. The intent was to bust the public unions, and Jerry supported having that happen in Wisconsin. It was not necessary.
Please hold your applause. Jerry, we'll give you a chance to respond quickly, and then we have to move on.
Public employees can still negotiate for wages. The unions said that they would give these back, but at the same time, there were emails that went out from these unions saying they weren't giving up an inch.
Please treat the candidates with respect. Let's move on.
I'd like to ask the representative a question. So having said that, would you then get rid of Act 10 and go back to the way it was?
I believe.
And if you would, how would you pay for it?
Well, let me tell you what I would do, Jerry. I would do today what I said we should have done at the beginning of the whole attack on collective bargaining and public worker rights, and that was to recognize that this was a complicated, difficult issue. It had nothing to do with solving the budget to strip away all worker rights. It should have been dealt with as a stand-alone public policy issue. We should have gone through our communities. We should have met with public employees. We should have met with employers. We should have met with taxpayers and said, is there a problem here now that concessions have been agreed to? Are there changes that are needed? Are there some modifications that should be made? I believe that then. I believe that now. I say collective bargaining rights for public employees ought to be restored. Nearly many people across the state agree with that. I would fight to have that happen, but I would do it in a careful, cautious, drawn out, where we can analyze the problem, if there is one, and let's look at possible solutions to problems that people would identify. That's the way we ought to be solving problems in Wisconsin, not through a bill that was intended to be rammed through the legislature in less than 6 days. And it didn't get done in 6 days, and people had an opportunity to understand that not only all of collective bargaining rights, but a number of other very problematic policies were in that bill.
So let's move on.
Is Don the answer then yes?
I think
you would restore the collective bargaining rights under Act 10.
I would restore collective bargaining rights, understanding that concessions have been made and agreed to.
Let's move on to Rob Mentzer, and we're going to forego the follow-up discussion with Rob's question.
You're running for office in a newly drawn 29th Senate district. Do you feel that the redistricting process was fair and effective? Do you feel that it was appropriate for legislators to be asked to sign a secrecy pledge about the process? And if you think the process could be improved, how would you improve it?
And for this one, we go first to Donna Seidel and then to Jerry Petrosky. Donna, you have 1 minute.
The redistricting process, which takes place every 10 years based on the census, has been done many times. And often there are political components to it. But never in Wisconsin has it been done in such a partisan, contentious, unfair, unreasonable way. Attorneys were hired by taxpayers, Democrats and Republicans, paid hundreds of thousands of dollars. They worked behind closed doors, they worked outside of the Capitol, and they worked with Republicans only, to the point that they met with some Republicans. Jerry, I believe, met outside of the Capitol with the attorneys that we all paid for on two separate occasions and signed the secret pledge. A secret pledge not to not only keep that information and the maps being drawn from Democrats, but to keep that information and the maps being drawn from the people that he allegedly cares about and represents. We ought to have a bipartisan commission like many other states do that draw the maps so it is not done to keep political power and control under your control, because you have the right to draw the maps they were for the next 10 years.
Jerry Petrosky, you have 1 minute.
Well, I think if Representative Seidel would have liked to have changed the process for the redistricting, she probably should have done it when she was in power. Now, this has been this way for a long time in this state. Every 10 years, we do a census. According to that census, some districts have to get bigger, some have to get smaller. The reality is, my district, and this is what I found out when I went to meet with these people, is that my district had to get smaller. Now, I'm not happy about the way they draw the districts. I wasn't happy the last time they did the drawing of the districts. But the reality is, as soon as the census was done, the Democrats filed a suit against this, so this was going to go and end up in court regardless. This pledge that they're talking about is a confidentiality agreement. Anytime you deal with a bunch of clients with a lawyer, they don't want the wrong information being distorted about how it comes out, because somebody is going to say something that isn't true. I can tell you in my case, they keep on taking away my backyard, and that doesn't make me happy at all. But the reality is other legislators are going to have to pick up voting area, and that's going to cut into my area, and my area is going to be changed. The good thing about this is under the Senate district, I actually would get back a lot of the area in my backyard that was taken away, not only this time, but in years prior.
Let's move on to Melissa Langvin, and once again we're going to forego the rebuttal session following her question.
Badger care is one of the fastest growing parts of the state budget, yet many people do rely on it for basic health care needs right now. What should the future of the Badger Care program be in our state?
And let's start with Jerry Petruski. You've got a minute, and then Donna.
In this last budget, there was a huge shortfall. We put in $1.2 billion into MA. Part of this was a problem that was carried over from the previous budget. When the last budget was there, there was a commitment to cut $500 million internally out of MA. That never happened, and that was part of the problem why we dealt with the $1.2 billion that had to go into MA. Now, there was a lot of different things that were done to create this. There was an expansion of the program. There was some qualifications that were changed. The qualifications that were changed was under Badger Care, you used to have to be under 133% of the federal poverty level in order to qualify. And Governor Doyle changed that to 200. And so if you had, you made $46,000 and a family of four, you'd still qualify for Badger Care. Well, we changed that and we went back to the 133. And if you make more than that, then you had to pay a stipend towards that program. I don't think there are any easy answers with this. This is going to be a continually escalating cost, and we have to find a way to deal with it. Unfortunately, the budget prior that Representative Seidel was involved in, they never made those cuts. And that created a problem down the road. You can only kick the can down the road that often, and somebody is going to have to deal with those problems.
Donna Seidel, you have 1 minute.
Well, what we didn't kick was 17,000 people off Badger Care who have no other opportunities to buy insurance on the private market. There are ways that we can begin to solve this health care crisis in Wisconsin. There are ways that we can work to increase coverage for more and more people. And one of them would be continue doing what had been done in Wisconsin. We were in a leadership position, states across the country, in creating marketplaces to expand opportunities for health care for small businesses and individuals. Unfortunately, under Governor Walker and his Republican allies, $37 million in federal money to help us continue to do that was turned back. Because of that, the ability to pool is taken out of our hands right now, and the ability for us to give information to individuals and small businesses about tax benefits and tax breaks available now is not being done because we did not have, under Governor Walker and the Republicans, the wisdom to see the benefit of continuing on the path to make good advances in creating better opportunities for health care so that we're not saying to more and more individuals and families, too bad, so sad, no health care for you, and what happens when they don't have health care? They present at the emergency room, and that is the most expensive kind of health care, and why across the country we see $38 billion of uncollected payments, because that is the only resource that people have.
We have to
do better than that.
Let's move on to Jeff Talen, and you have the next question, Jeff, and we're going to have a very short rebuttal.
All right. Question connected to both health care and education. A Center for Disease Control report shows teenage pregnancy rates are down 44% between 1991 and 2010. It credits messages about pregnancy prevention. To Representative Petrowski, you voted for a measure to stop requiring schools to teach about birth control. Isn't it rather naive to believe a just say no brand of teaching isn't going to lead to higher teen pregnancy rates? And then to Representative Seidel, you voted against a measure requiring schools to teach abstinence is the only reliable form of birth control. Isn't that scientifically correct?
Donna Seidel, you have a minute.
It's a great point, Jeff, and you're absolutely right. It is the only absolutely proven method to avoid unintended pregnancies. And that's why when we passed comprehensive sex ed after years of intending to get that done, we made sure that this was comprehensive, age appropriate, and medically accurate, and that it contained both abstinent-only information along with information about prevention and contraception. And what we knew was that across the state, we had to put a control on unintended pregnancies for young women, because children born in those situations are likely to experience a lifetime of poverty as well as their mothers. We also knew that unless teens were prepared and understood how to avoid the riskiest behaviors, we would continue to see an escalating rate of STDs. And these sexually transmitted diseases are not happening at alarming rates just in Milwaukee and southeastern Wisconsin, but throughout the state, throughout northern Wisconsin, throughout rural Wisconsin. I think we have an obligation to make sure our kids are armed with the best information so that they are healthy, so that they can be productive in our communities and eventually part of a very successful workforce. So
Jerry,
I was very disappointed that it was
rolled
back.
Your time is up, Jerry.
And I appreciate the question, Jeff. I don't think you have a real clear picture of what this is. What this law did was dictated to every school district that if you're going to teach sex ed, you're going to teach it the Madison way. What I believe is that there should be local control. Parents of the children in that school, local school boards, should be able to establish what they would like to see taught in their sex education program. It's as simple as that, and it is a local control issue. The parents should have input into this, and so should the school board.
I'm Glenn Moberg. You're listening to a Route 51 rebroadcast of the 29th State Senate recall election debate between Republican Jerry Petrowski and Democrat Donna Seidel at UW Marathon County Center for Civic Engagement Theater on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
Support for WPR comes from UMR, a United Healthcare company providing employee benefits administration, integrated health management, and pharmacy benefits administration for self-funded employers throughout the U.S. More at umr.com.
For the next question, we go to Matt Lehman of WSAU AM 550. Matt.
There have been unsuccessful efforts in the past to take away the governor's power to appoint the Department of Natural Resources secretary and give that power to the Natural Resources Board. Who do you believe should have the power to appoint the DNR secretary?
And we go first to Jerry Petrowski and then to Donna Seidel.
All of the agencies basically have a head that meets with the governor on a regular basis. I think that close working relationship is really important in order to get the most done. And I am in favor of the governor appointing the secretary of the DNR along with the secretary of Veterans Affairs and everything else. And we actually had a big discussion on this last session, because even the previous secretaries from the Veterans Affairs said, and one was a Democrat, one was a Republican, said, if you want the agency to function like it should, like an arm of government, there needs to be that connection and that support from the Department of Administration, from the governor. The goal in this, it's, you know, some people will say that, you know, there are problems with this, but I think the reality is this does work, and I think it's important.
Donna Seidel, you have 1 minute.
Well, I'm not sure that it works for everyone. And I did support the change from the governor's appointment of the DNR secretary to one that would be legislatively approved. And there were a number of other changes that were made in Act 10 that gave the governor more appointing authority. And one of the policy pieces in Act 10 that most people weren't aware of, that the governor took 39 high-level civil service positions and transform those positions into political appointees. We were opposed to that. We saw that when the governor in Act 10 took away legislative oversight of many health care-related decisions like provisions for Badger Care, eligibility requirements, income standards, took that away from the long-held legislative review and gave it to his politically appointed Secretary of Health, Dennis Smith, to make unilateral decisions. I was opposed to that as well.
And, Matt, you have a follow-up question?
I do. I want to ask about, with the rancor that exists on our state Supreme Court, another governance question, if you will. Do you support moving toward a system of appointing judges versus having them popularly elected?
One of the things that I strongly supported to help in part to resolve part of this was to have public financing of Supreme Court elections. And I think that would go a long way in resolving many of the problems that we've seen there. We passed public financing for Supreme Court elections to keep the wealthiest special interests and the super PACs from being able to buy an election. However, that was rolled back this session under the Republican control.
I think there's a clause in there that a governor can appoint when there's a partial of a term left when somebody leaves. Otherwise, I'm in favor of electing judges instead of appointing. I think that's a process that's been around a long time, and I think it works. Right now, we live in times where it seems really difficult for people to get along, and it's unfortunate.
Let's move on to our final question. Wisconsin's new voter ID law has been found unconstitutional twice. Is the law necessary to prevent voter fraud, or as the judges have ruled, is it an attempt to keep minority groups, the poor, and the elderly from voting? We'll start with Donna Seidel and then go to Jerry Petruski.
The voter ID bill, which was one of the most restrictive voter ID requirements in the state, that was advanced with a lot of acrimony when we should have been focused on growing jobs in the economy, was unnecessary, was a solution in search of a problem. We had situation and examination and inspection one by one, state and federal, that proved it. The number of fraudulent voting cases in Wisconsin were minuscule, and most of them, I think, out of just a handful of cases, about 9 of those were felons voting. And let me tell you, folks, these are felons who have been released from jail and prison, but technically, we're still should not have voted because they may have been on probation or parole requirements that no one was aware of. This $17 million bill to implement at a time when we were taking those dollars from public schools was money that was spent in the wrong direction. And now I talk to voting officials all over the state. Most of the time are at their wits' end or in tears because they can't begin to understand the complexity of this cumbersome, difficult, complicated, unnecessary law that does nothing more than make people think that they cannot vote or they should not vote, and it does disenfranchise the most vulnerable.
Jerry Petruski, you have a minute.
I agree with Don on this also. The reality, you can't rent a tape, you can't cash a check. There's almost nothing that you can't do without an ID, and that's voting. There have been cases where we know that there's fraud. A number of years ago in Milwaukee, they sent out a bunch of postcards to the addresses of voters. They got thousands of them back that said no such address. So there is voter fraud. It hasn't been prosecuted because how do you go after somebody that just walks in and disappears after that? You've heard the stories about cigarettes for votes and everything else. Why should some people vote not count because somebody else is fraudulently voting? I think this is common sense, and I think we've come to a time where almost everybody has an ID. We put some things into the bill so that somebody that is handicapped, some of the elderly that have trouble getting around,
we worked it out so that they would have exemptions to this rule. So I think voter ID has come. There are parts of it that are probably in question right now in the court system, so we're going to have to wait till the court rules on it.
On this question of who has an ID and who doesn't, according to the Employment and Training Institute of the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, the people who don't have driver's licenses, 55% of African-American males, 49% of African-American females, 46% of Hispanic males, 59% of Hispanic females. For young adults, 78% of African-American males, 66% of African-American females, only 17% of white people don't have driver's licenses. The argument is many of these people are poor, the Hispanics and blacks. They don't have cars. They can't get to Department of Motor Vehicle offices. So I'd like you to discuss that in light of those statistics. Doesn't this really impose a problem on a lot of people who otherwise would be able to vote?
You know, Glenn, I can't imagine any single subject that ought to be more important to those of us who are elected to serve and represent taxpayers and voters, our constituents all over the state, than the ability to be able to cast their vote. For Jerry to, in such a cavalier way, Jerry, say, just relax, almost everybody has an ID. That's great. I'm worried about all those other people that you named, Glenn, that don't have the ID, that people like Ruth Ellen Frank from the village of Brokaw, who has been living in the same house for 84 years, who is on, has been on the village board, who walks across the street to vote and knows everyone in her village. Guess what? She's one of those people that doesn't have an ID. And what was she told? Oh, don't worry about it. Just tell them that you're incapacitated and you need an absentee vote. She said, wait, that would be untrue and that would be voter fraud.
Don, I have to cut you off. Jerry, you've got 30 seconds to make your point.
We went ahead and put money into the program so that they can get driver's license without charge. I still have a real hard time believing that we have such a dramatic number of people that are old enough to vote who haven't gotten a driver's license along the way. In some communities, when you don't have a birth certificate, like the lady over here in Brokaw, the local government finds a way to get her a birth certificate. I don't know, most everybody in this room, I bet you, has a driver's license.
We've come to the closing statements, and we're going to do the coin toss right here because I neglected to do it before. Jerry, why don't you call it, heads or tails?
Tails.
And it is tails. Do you want to go first or second?
Second.
Donna, you've got the first closing statement.
Well, thank you. Glenn, thanks again to the sponsors and hosts of tonight's event. And clearly from the crowded room, we can see that these are important events that voters really care about and pay attention to. And I've said this from the beginning of this campaign. We should be doing more of these. Because when we ask you, when we ask voters for your support, you ought to be able to expect that you can have these conversations with us and let us know exactly where we stand. And I'm glad we've had an opportunity to do that tonight. This election is about priorities and choices. And as I've gone around this district and talked with people in every community of the 29th district, what they tell me is what they care about most. Of course, they wake up at night worried about where they're going to find the next job to replace the one they just lost. They're worried that their children's school is going to close, and they want to know where I stand. And when we talk about what my legislative priorities have been for the last 8 years, they understand that their priorities and mine are linked and identical. And what I care about is what they care about. And I want to support the families and our communities. And that is why I'm running for state senate. I know that in Wisconsin we can do better. I know that we can stop the civil war. We can bring the polarization to an end. We can set aside egos, work across the aisle. I have done that. I have a record of doing that. I am excited to have an opportunity to go to Madison, work in the state senate in January.
Donna, we have to move on.
Okay,
Jerry,
thank you.
You've got a minute.
Thank you, Glenn. Thank you, Robert, Melissa, Jeff, Matt. Thank you for inviting us. I thank all of you for coming here tonight. My dad always told me that you can't build yourself up by tearing others
down. And I really believe that. Being a legislator is not just about voting your yes or no. It's about being involved in the community. It's about working through issues with people and finding solutions. It's about being involved in the community to try to make the place we live better, a better place to work, to live, to raise a family, and to retire. I will always strive to work with somebody that needs my help and wants to work together to find solutions, because that's what I do. I thank you all again for coming. I ask you for your vote on June 5. I will always try to earn your support and your vote. Thank you.
That concludes tonight's debate between Republican Jerry Petruski and Democrat Donna Seidel. Give our candidates and our panelists and yourselves a round of applause. Thanks for listening. Don't forget to vote Tuesday, June 5th. Good night, everybody.